I'm with Lee Waters, MS for Llanelli, Deputy Minister for Economy and Transport. Lee, lots going on. Obviously, First Minister today announcing more measures, certainly for supermarkets, people safe in work, vaccine rollouts, glimmers of hope he's talking about, answering questions with the press about, you know, people's shopping habits and the safety of supermarkets. There are numerous approaches we've seen to the way governments are dealing with the pandemic and subsequent vaccination programs. Do you believe that the Welsh Government has the right approach, and or do you envisage more changes in direction as and when evidence of other approaches succeed or fail come to light?
Well, who can honestly say in the middle of this pandemic, Alan, that we've got everything right? I just don't think any government can say that. This is an unprecedented situation that we're facing, and it is so rapidly changing. I think what we are trying to do as a Welsh government is to be open and honest and transparent about the decisions we're making. We publish all our evidence. We do a three-weekly review. We listen to the chief scientific officer and the chief medical officer every time. We explain why we've made those decisions. When we make decisions, we try and give people notice of the change that is coming. Things don't come like a thunderclap out of the sky by and large. So I think we are trying to do this as sensibly and openly and as cautiously as we can. But everywhere around the world, governments are struggling to know how best to deal with this. They're moving between different stages of lockdowns. Now, of course, we're into the latest phase of this around the vaccine. And it is extraordinary that within a year, you know, it's only been a year since the first death in Wuhan, to us not only inventing a vaccine, making sure it's safe, but distributing it. And from Monday, every GP surgery in the area will be giving out the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. And the supplies are increasing week on week. The distribution is increasing week on week. And by the middle of February, we will have vaccinated all over 80-year-olds and frontline staff. Now, that is, I think, pretty good going. People always want us to go faster. People are always frustrated and anxious, and there's no shortage of criticism. But I think we're doing the best that we can do in exceptionally difficult circumstances.
There is, you know, the rollout of the vaccine is another example where there has been some confusion with GPs' surgeries. GPs critical. We heard Dr. Hicks talking about the Avenue Villa surgery there and people that are on high priority, and it's sort of become a postcode lottery. We did ask the First Minister that question today. But there is a debate also about placing homeless people on that priority list. Where do you stand on that?
Well, there's a debate about placing all sorts of people on the priority list. And the nature of priorities, if you make one group higher, you have to bring one group down. Now, I've heard a case made to me in the last week for plumbers, for social workers, for policemen, for a range of others. What we've done is listened to the Joint Immunisation and Vaccination Committee, and they have done an analysis based on who is at most risk of dying and being so severely ill that they have to go into hospital. Let's put a list based on those people, because one of our objectives through this vaccination, Alan, is to try to stop the NHS from becoming overwhelmed. You know, we know that our hospitals and our wards are clogged up with a whole range of very sick people. We know people who are there with COVID stay in longer than people without COVID, and they get very ill. And sadly, a great deal of them are dying. The hospitalization is double this time round. It was the first time round. The daily death figures are staggering. Again, 60 people today. You know, we shrug it off now. This is 60 people and families. That's, you know, that's a large street's worth of people dying every day from this horrible virus. So that's our priority, is to protect the most vulnerable first. Once we've done the most vulnerable first, which will take us probably through to the spring, then we can have debates about the next lot of categories. But the reality of this is that everybody is anxious, everybody wants it as soon as possible, and there are all sorts of groups who can make a special case for why they should go in front of another group. But we're doing as we've done all along. We're listening to the scientists and the doctors to do this as transparently as we possibly can.
And we hear a lot about the public. We hear a lot about workplaces and all sorts of things. What we don't hear about is what's going on within the Senedd and the ministers themselves and the politicians. How are they coping under the pressure of the pandemic? Because there's a huge amount of pressure on politicians at the moment.
Well, Well, it's sweet of you to ask, Alan. There's not many people care about the politicians in all of this. No. I think everybody in government, both local government and central government, and in the health service, anybody in public services, and that's, after all, politics is a public service, are finding it really difficult. You know, it's been a grind of coming up to a year now with the floods this time last year. It's been a year of crisis management, really, and it is unrelenting. And also, you know, from a human being point of view, like lots of people who are dealing with this pandemic in these different guises, it's just miserable. You know, yep. It's grim. You know, people didn't go into these jobs in order to deal with death and disease and people losing their businesses. And you know, the thing that weighs heavily on our shoulders, we sit in these meetings every day and we know there are consequences to the decisions we make. People's lives and people's livelihoods rest on what we do. And often it's very hard to know what the right or wrong is. We're not choosing between good options. We're choosing between a bad option and a less bad option. But they're all, you know, none of them are great options. So these are hard and miserable decisions to make. But as I say, we do the best we can and to be as open and honest about the reasons why we make them. And we accept that there are going to be people, whatever we do, who take a different view. And that's inevitable.
Well, that leads on to my next question. The controls and laws being put in place during the pandemic are worrying, especially to those who cherish some liberty and democracy. If the situation persists long into 2021, do you fear for the effects this may have on people of Wales, especially economically, socially, and mentally?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. These are huge, you know, these are retrograde steps we're taking. These are infringements of people's persons, liberties and freedoms. These are draconian measures. There's no doubt about that. And we don't use these powers lightly. I think we're in such an extreme situation where most people accept this is a common sense thing to do. And lots of people have been urging us to go further. But we need to be very careful about that because, you know, this is how the rot sets in, isn't it? So we are conscious of that. But I'm not entirely sure if we're in the business of trying to save people's lives, what the alternative is.
We did mention some of this to the First Minister this morning, but there has been demonising, especially on social media, those people who don't wish to follow the narrative, follow the rules to a certain extent. Communities becoming reminiscent of the sort of Ceausescu securitate informing on each other. Do you have concerns over people's right to oppose the narrative? I know you may not support it, but do you welcome the fact that they can oppose the narrative if they want to?
Well, I think you're slightly overplaying it by comparing us to Ceausescu's Romania, Alan. But, you know, for sure, this is a difficult time. And, you know, what we don't want to see happen is social cohesion fall apart as a result of it and people turning on each other. And there are some signs at the margins of that happening. And that is very troubling. And that's why, you know, we are proceeding cautiously. We exercise these powers under public health laws. And there is a legal test that we have to meet, that these are proportional and reasonable measures. You know, we don't just sit there and stick a finger in the air. You know, these are based on as much robust evidence as we can marshal, and some of it is imperfect. And we have our own lawyers challenging us all the time about whether or not this is a reasonable and proportional response. So
that's good to
this
know.
This is not, you know, so it's not these aren't flippantly exercised. Is the first point I'd make. The second point about people opposing the narrative, as you put it, you know, of course people are going to challenge this, as they should. We are a democracy. There are different views. We're the first to say we don't have a rule book of how to do this, and we can't say with 100% certainty that we're making the right decisions. We're making the best decisions we can with the evidence we can in the circumstances. We don't have the time to scrutinize and think through and kick the tires for every decision we make that we would want to do in normal circumstances. But we're in a public health emergency. I do think in terms of, you know, I don't know if it's behind your questions, I think people who refuse to wear masks, not for any health reason, just because they don't agree with it, or people who spread false information, or people who refuse to take the vaccine, I think that goes beyond exercising their own personal liberty to endangering the liberties of others. And that's where I think it crosses the line. And I think there's always a tension when you're talking about liberties about your own personal freedom versus the collective good and freedom. And I think, you know, we're seeing that theory put into practice. And there are a small number of people who are deliberately irresponsible, and they are, you know, putting at risk the lives of others and social cohesion. So I don't defend their right to do that. I recognize they're going to do it anyway. But I think that is a problem for us all.
And you, I mean, it's good to know that you've got that legal sort of back, you know, backup and challenging those decisions. We heard Wales Online, for instance, questioning the First Minister and asking him if he was going to sort of implement a, you must only shop one day a week or 2 days a week or something like that, you know, to restrict people shopping. So yeah, I do understand where you're coming from on that. Yeah, let's just look at the election, and it's coming up in May. The results of the last one, obviously, were quite close. Do you think the fruits of your labour so far are going to pay dividends? Do you think you've done enough now within your term to sort of secure a decisive victory?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, I'm a former political correspondent, and I've always said only fools predict elections. So I'm not going to fall into my own trap there. I guess the thing I've said, you know, Llanelli is a historically marginal seat at Senate elections. Only once in 21 years has anybody got a majority higher than 400. So, you know, it's always been close. My honest answer here, again, I don't want to sound pious about this. I don't see politics as a career. Okay, I think it is a public service. I've stood for the right reasons, I think, certainly to the best of intention, to try and help the area that I've come from. I think I have a contribution to make, and I've tried my level best to make that contribution. I've worked as hard as I can, and I've been true to myself. I am willing to put myself forward for another term. It's not without its sacrifice. It's not without its downsides. But I think there's more I'd like to contribute. It's up to people how they vote. And I'll obviously accept the decision and try and find something else to do with my life if I don't succeed. But I think both me and my party have an agenda of fairness and social justice that is the right one. I personally have worked on some agendas around building local economies and firms, around changing public services so they're more responsive to individual citizens through using digital, through putting climate change at the centre of policy, which has been not without its controversy. So I've not taken a risk-free approach, even though, you know, I've got the most marginal seat in Wales. You might have said, you know, the easiest way to get through is keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, and you know, hope you get through it. That's not the course I've taken. I said when I got elected, I would speak up and I would speak out and I would speak true to my values. And I hope I've done that. It's up to people to respond if that's what they want.
You have been championing things like cycling, public transport. Do you think that, I know you've done a lot other than that, but do you think that these are the sort of major concerns of your constituents? There seems to be a portal at Machynnys which transports men in bulging lycra on £4,000 bikes onto the road at Machynnys and out in Cydweli. So that's the only time we seem to see these men six abreast and women. We you know, I know it's an issue, and I'm an environmentalist. I'd like to see, you know, a cleaner world, healthier world for my children. I'd like to see everyone on bikes in Llanelli, but it's not happening, is it?
No, of course not. Look, I am passionate about climate change. It is the biggest challenge our generation faces. It's the biggest challenge our children will face. Okay, and we have to take hundreds of different approaches to tackling climate change, because it has come about by man's actions through industrialization and all the rest of it. Now, it has many different elements: recycling, industrial pollution, consumer behavior. There's lots of different things we have, all of us have to change as a society and as individuals. Now, one small element of that is the way we move around. We know that 17% of our country's harmful emissions come from our transport. So clearly, if we are going to meet these ambitious targets of the Paris Treaty and all the rest of it to try and stop this runaway climate change, which is affecting us all, it's, you know, it's one of the reasons why we've got flooding in Llanelli. You know, it is real world consequences for us now today, and it'll have more in the years to come if we don't stop it. The way we move around contributes to that. And I'm trying to argue and push forward an agenda that can help to chip away at that impact. And by the way, in a way that helps the environment and benefits our health and benefits our community. It's a fringe concern. It only bothers a small minority of people at the moment. But unless we change that, Alan, we are not going to tackle the societal problem of climate change.
Looking at education, you know that, again, it's not a personal issue, but this is something we've been involved with as a family for a long time. But the potential is that children now have to remain home. Homeschooling has historically been ignored in Wales, as you know. Wales having no, parents, families having no financial support from local authorities or government. People have been homeschooling for many years, and they'll be asking whether this is the time when Welsh government ensures that those children on the homeschool front actually receive their share of the money and resources available for their education or otherwise. Because as it stands, even though they're homeschooled and now they're on a level playing field with the children who are by way of COVID-19 homeschooled, those people, because they're not registered on the at-school list, are still outside. They don't get anything.
Well, nor do the children who are being homeschooled through COVID.
Well, there's talk about laptops. There's, you know, they get... There is provision for the children that are home, free school meals and all sorts of things. But with the homeschool fraternity, there's absolutely nothing. There never has been. And homeschool all of a sudden has become, you know, the norm, hasn't it? It's fashionable in a way, albeit forced fashion, but it is fashionable.
Well, the digital exclusion point, the ability to have devices and data, is open to everybody, not just people in mainstream schools, as I understand it. So if you are homeschooling and you are struggling if you are digitally excluded and don't have the devices or the data, then you can apply to the council to have that. I don't think that's exclusively for mainstream. You know, I understand your broader point. Clearly, to withdraw yourself from collective provision is a choice. It's not a choice that's particularly encouraged, because we take a view that collective provision is overall in everyone's interests. But people take a different view and respect that view. But I don't think, having then taken a view, it's reasonable to demand resources follow your own personal choice, when that's not a choice society as a whole thinks is desirable. I think the issue, I think there is a broader issue about why is it that people want to pull out of provision, and for some families it's an ideology, it's a belief, fair enough. For some families, it's the fact the mainstream system has failed them. It's the fact that their children have neurodevelopmental challenges that mainstream does not cater to, and that, I think, that's a different matter. And I think that is something we need to confront and address, because this one size fits all system does not work for every child, and the mainstream system is not good enough at dealing with that diversity of need.
Last question, and this is on business. Welsh Government is set to get £227 million. The Director General of the CBI Business Group, Tony Danker, has warned that some of this is still not getting to the smaller businesses. BCC Director General Adam Marshall warned the same thing, as did the Federation of Small Businesses. There are still people slipping through the net. There are businesses, by nature of their structure or their, the fact that they may not have a premises, or maybe they even started up in, just after the COVID came in or just before or something. There are still businesses slipping through the net. When we asked the First Minister, he said he would be asking Ken Skates and yourself to have a look at some of these issues to see where the gaps are and whether or not they can be filled. Is that something you're looking at?
So just to start off with your point that we're somehow having this extra money from Westminster, that's a smoke and mirrors exercise. We have had money as a consequence of spending decisions made in England, which is our entitlement as part of the UK. We have spent over and above that. We are spending more than any other part of the UK on supporting businesses. We're spending £2 billion out of our budget giving to people who are running private businesses to compensate them for the horrendous strain their business has been put under through COVID, through no fault of their own. We simply do not have enough money. There is not enough public money available to give everybody enough money to compensate from what they've lost. So we have to make we have to make judgments about where the money that we do make available, as I say, it's a considerable amount, and it's money spent not spent on other things, where that has the greatest effect. And the judgment we've made is we should put the money where we can save the most jobs. So the thresholds we've put about, you know, owning a property, that's partly because it's easier to pay it out quickly because you're registered for business rates and we can get out the door through councils in relatively short order to provide help. So there's a, you know, there's a delivery mechanism for that money, but also it's a way of sort of sorting out, you know, who is more likely to be in a position to safeguard jobs. So that is very harsh on sole traders and the self-employed. And this is, you know, this is a form of rough justice, really, isn't it? There are UK-wide schemes, the SAYS scheme, Self-Employed Income Support, which does help people who are self-employed. There's the furlough scheme provided by the UK government. So those are in existence. Our money, our 2 billion, is to top up, to fill in gaps that we think the UK-wide system has missed. And it's saved an enormous number of jobs and saved an enormous number of businesses, but it hasn't been able to reach everybody. Mm. And that is, you know, that is really tough. And it is heartbreaking for the people who's built up businesses and see them going. And it's tough on us to have to make those judgments, but we just don't have the money to give to everyone, I'm afraid.
Lee Waters, thanks very much for speaking to Llanelli Online.